and welcome to MedTalks, conversations by medical students for medical students. I'm Deborah, and this is my partner, Joey.
What's up, guys?
And for this new season of MedTalks, we're focusing our attention on the wide spectrum of healthcare professionals. So we're going to be interviewing a wide variety of allied healthcare professionals, everything from a nurse to a kinesiologist to a chiropractor and everything in between. And we're doing this because we feel that med students and doctors don't really fully understand the role of other healthcare professions or pay them the respect that they deserve. So that being said, let's educate and empower ourselves.
Thanks, Debbie. Lovely intro there. Great to be back in studio and recording another episode. A warm welcome to all our listeners. Thank you for giving this episode a listen. We appreciate your support. And we implore you to please leave us some feedback, tell us what you like, and more importantly, what you don't like, or share an idea about a topic and maybe you can be our next guest star. Moving on to today's topic, we will be diving into the realm of occupational therapy, aka OT, for those of you who don't know what OT stands for. We are fortunate enough to welcome Bronwyn Carter to today's show. Bronwyn, welcome. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, guys.
It's only a pleasure.
Yeah, absolute pleasure. I'm very excited about this episode. I actually wanted to become an occupational therapist, but my life took different turns, so I'm very curious to hear. So just to start things off, where and when did you study occupational therapy?
So I did my undergraduate at Tux.
Oh, nice. Fellow Tuck student.
Yes, I was in Res. Good time.
Oh, in Kalitia then.
Yeah, I was in Kalitia. Graduated in 2016 and then did my comm serv in 2017 at Tambo Memorial Hospital in Boksburg.
Okay.
And then moved into private practice. And then last year I started doing my master's by coursework at WITS. So part-time, and hopefully going to have finished that by the end of this year. Got exams in 3 weeks.
Good luck.
So. Oh, studying must be hard underway.
Yeah. Online lectures, I feel for you guys. I've only had a few this year, and no joke.
Literally, I think
I'll... No motivation.
No. Jerry and I were talking about it before we came in, and we're just like, yeah, we're really falling behind.
I waste so much time in the morning, because I get ready for so long, and then it's like, I'm ready by 10, but I've been awake since 7. And
yeah, bit of a waste. Okay. So how was your experience at university as an OT, and did you find the degree to be challenging at all?
So I definitely think... time management-wise, that the undergraduate degree is challenging. They squeeze a lot into 4 years.
I 100% agree with you on that.
I think they could definitely stretch it into 5 years, and you would be fine with that. So
it's good being a student as well.
I definitely have done a student life for an extra year. My parents might not have been so happy. But, it was good. I really enjoyed it. Some of the stuff... it's challenging. So, I mean, you've got to balance the sort of medical knowledge that you're getting in first and second year, all those subjects with the OT-specific subject, which is, I think, what packs a lot in.
Yeah.
And that integration only really comes later in, like, your third and fourth year. You really start to see how it all fits together.
How it strings together. And I think I feel exactly the same with regards to medicine. I mean, our first 2 years were just, what are the basic sciences? And then you kind of start doing the more clinical stuff, but nothing makes sense. And now literally only in my fifth year, I'm starting to, like, put everything together. And to consolidate all that information, it's a process. It really takes a lot of effort.
Yeah. Especially when you've crammed it to start with.
100%.
Like, it's short-term knowledge. It just flies out.
I think that was one of the nicest things going back and doing masters now, especially in first year when we did the neuroanatomy and neurophysiology again in more depth. I found it so much easier to learn because I had practical cases that I could apply it to. So when we were talking through things, I could see how it all fitted or how it all fits together. And that made the learning so much easier and a lot more enjoyable.
Yeah, it doesn't just kind of fly straight over your head.
No. And you're impressed when you're explaining something to a parent, you're giving them feedback after an assessment, and you can be like, yeah, this in the brain, and you sound so smart and everything.
I know what's going on.
Yeah.
All right, so... what made you decide to study occupational therapy?
So the cliched answer of I wanted to help people definitely
heard that one before.
comes to mind. Mm-hmm. And I think the an interesting thing when you're sort of in high school and you think the only way, you know, working behind a desk is boring.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought.
100% agree with you there. We had the same thought process.
And I didn't want to be bored working behind a desk. Plus, you can't interact with people from behind a desk.
Except your colleagues, and they could be sucky.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't want to take that chance.
So I knew I wanted to help people, and then deciding sort of between medicine was definitely in the mix. But ultimately, and this, I don't know where my 16, 17, 18-year-old brain came up with this, was that I knew I wanted to be a mum one day. And I didn't think that being a doctor was going to be super, work super well with being a mum as well, being a present mum. So I decided that OT would fit well with that, plus I liked kids.
Yeah.
So that was sort of the...
No, and I definitely agree with you. I think it's something that you have to really weigh your choices up on, and when you are young and sometimes maybe not as informed, I think it's what a lot of what we're told as women. But it's also, to be honest with you, I think once you kind of go into child psychology a bit more and you realize the immense impact it has on a child, if you are an absent parent or if you just like mess up on the smallest thing, like if you teach your kids how to brush their teeth wrong, like the impact that could have on them. So I completely understand your thinking, and I think a lot of my friends as well, we've had these conversations about like being a mother and, you know, being a specialist even, and is it something that you want to go into? And that is one of my biggest decisions that I have to make one day, and I completely understand that. So it's a very irrelevant topic, but thank goodness also being a GP, like, I think it's quite a nice life. Can manage it.
We'll have to wait and see.
I mean, from the GPs I worked with, what I've seen, they're having a good time.
Yeah. I think so much of it comes down to perception and what you perceive going into things as being possible or not possible.
Yeah.
And only once you're actually in it and doing it do you realize, oh, yeah, I could have managed this, or no, maybe not. Like, it wasn't the right thing. So.
But I think as well, especially being in, and it's actually so, you are Ryan Carter from Docs and Slops, you are his wife, and something he said to us that really stuck with me is that we don't like to call you guys the allied health professionals, we like to call you the rehabilitation team, but it's, I think it's such a rewarding process because you guys actually get to see the patients heal, whereas sometimes as doctors we're just like, okay, here's the script, have fun, send you off. And I think that's also really a rewarding process.
I definitely think having seen what Ra's gone through and gotten some like secondhand, firsthand experience, that I made the right choice doing OT from the perspective of the patient interaction and how we get to interact with patients and see them through that process. Yeah. I think I would have been very frustrated if I had done medicine.
Yeah.
I think the work, the actual academic side of it, I would have coped with.
Yeah.
But that emotional side of it, I think I would have gotten really exhausted.
And I think that's another a misconception that people have, is that like medicine is the most difficult thing, and it really isn't. Like academically, it's just a lot of work. That's all it is.
It's volume.
Yeah. It's just volume. That's it. But it's not like high grade. I mean, I'd never be able to be an engineer. Like, bless them and their maths, but not for me. But that's the thing, and it's just, I completely agree with you. It's just, emotionally, it can be exceptionally frustrating because we don't always get to... It's like a hopeless situation a lot of the time. And I'd like to think that in your guys' field, it's not always like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes it can also be frustrating, but I think majority of the time you are getting that deeper connection, which I think is what a lot of people get into medicine for.
Yeah.
And you don't get it.
Seeking it.
Yeah, you don't, and you don't have the time, and that... Obviously, goes back. Now I sound like Ryan. We've had these conversations, but it is something fortunate in the rehab team that you do get to do.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you also are part of our taxed healthcare system. So really, despite the allied healthcare team still works in a subpar environment, and that's something that hopefully we can change through these conversations.
Yeah,
we're starting the process, getting the ball rolling.
That's exactly what
to the Docs and Stuffs podcast, guys.
It's a great one.
It is a good one.
I agree.
Yeah.
No bias here.
None at all.
Definitely a wise decision by 16, 17-year-old Bronwyn to study occupational
therapy. Ryan thinks so too.
Wise beyond your years.
Mm.
Well, Bronwyn, tell us, or put simply, what does occupational therapy entail? What does an occupational therapist do?
So the common misconception for anyone who doesn't know what OT is, if they hear I'm an occupational therapist, is do I help people find jobs? Because occupation must have to do with a job.
It's quite a nice literal meaning.
Yeah. If you're going to occupational health and safety, that's only what those things have to do with. Mm-hmm. Or I help kids with their handwriting. That's another one I've heard a lot of times. And as much as both those things are true, mm-hmm. they are like two tiny components of the bigger picture of what we do. So when you think occupation, it's everything that you do every day. So anything you want to, need to, or are expected to do. And an OT can help you with any of those things. So as soon as someone's experiencing difficulty doing something that's meaningful to them or something that they have to do,
mm-hmm.
from your tiniest toddler to your geriatric patient group, that's where we can come in and say, okay, why is this person having difficulty doing what they need to, and where can we intervene? And that's on the broad
mm-hmm.
picture is what OT is and what we actually do, which I think gets lost some of the time.
I can imagine.
Definitely.
But I think what a beautiful field, because I can imagine people feeling really hopeless, you know, if you have like a set of skills and you lose them or you aren't fully developing, and just to have someone to like guide you, I think it just like that hope that it must give people must be remarkable.
Yeah, and I think it's something we don't actively always think about. So I'm sometimes surprised when you ask patients, you know, what are you struggling to do? Like, what do you want to be easier for you? What things are meaningful in your life that you do? And I actually struggle to answer that sometimes. And I don't think we're always so good at identifying why we do the things we do and what's actually meaningful to us. And really being active thinkers about how we engage with things. Because everything you do is occupation.
Mm-hmm.
They speak about us as humans being occupational beings. That's how we make meaning out of our lives. Without occupation, we'd be sitting, the thinking man just sitting, even thinking basically is an occupation. Like you can't have life without it. So it really, and I think in recent years there's been a move, especially with the medical aids, towards focusing on function and having functional outcomes. So with the ICF, that all goes back to function, and everyone's now got to talk back to function in the team, and the OTs are sitting going, guys, we've been doing this for years. Welcome.
Yeah.
This is what we're all about.
Yeah.
That's the big picture.
The gist of it, okay. Tell me, Ron, what are the pillars that occupational therapy is built on?
So I think I've sort of mentioned there that idea that humans are occupational beings. And so occupational science is what underpins the practice of occupational therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And occupational science basically looks at the reasons why people do the things they do. And it speaks a lot about how you've got a transactional nature of occupation. So a person, the environment, and the occupation is the linking factor between those two things. And through that, they can change each other. So a person can, through the occupation, change the environment. And there's a backflow of that as well.
Mm.
When they interact with the environment, the occupation is shaped by what the environment looks like. And that all impacts on you as a person. And looking at not just the quality of your performance, but the meaningful engagement of your performance in different occupations.
Yeah.
And that really is the core pillar underpinning everything that we do and all the research that we do.
That's beautifully explained. Thank you.
See, this is the joy of doing a master's. This stuff in first year sounds so vague.
It does, yeah. Like, yeah.
It sounds so, so vague. When you sit in first year OT.
I'm like, okay, so what am I doing, though?
Yeah, and everyone's doing, especially when you're on the medical campus, everyone comes back from lectures, and they've done this super, like, complicated, sounds complicated stuff, and mm-hmm. you come back, and you've made a card, or you've baked or done something like that. And everyone's like, oh, you guys do nothing. This is so, and
this must be fun to
yeah,
study.
This must be so much fun. You know, oh, this is easy, whatever. But actually when you get, that's that thing of you only really integrate that knowledge once you see it in practice and you realize,
yeah,
oh my word, like that was so valuable what we were doing there. But you, until you've gone through it, you don't see like yeah. how it all fits together.
Hindsight is 20/20 vision.
Yeah, 100%. That's exactly it.
So, Bronwyn, where in a patient's journey should they see an OT? And what type of patients do occupational therapists commonly treat?
Everybody.
Is it everything from pediatrics to geriatrics? So, I mean, yeah. what's between it? Pretty much everything.
So, really, as soon as someone is experiencing any form of occupational dysfunction, commonly with kids, you'll see, for example, kiddies who are missing their milestones, mm-hmm. Kiddies who are having difficulty eating or feeding. We work closely with a speech therapist there, so there can be obviously a lot of reasons, but any activity of daily living there we'd speak about. So toddlers who are having difficulty with, like, following a routine in the morning or getting dressed. Mom's pulling her hair out because she cannot get this kid to do anything. Or they're having difficulty at school. So school is the one people generally end up knowing mostly what we do. So the handwriting difficulties and stuff. But kiddies are even having social difficulties on the playground. They're struggling to play. They just don't have age-appropriate play, or they can't make friends because they don't know how to play. Sure. Or your kids at school who have, like, proper learning disabilities. Obviously, we range from, it doesn't have to be someone with a diagnosis. So yes. I think that's also important, is that it doesn't just have to be, oh, now you've got cerebral palsy, or now
you've got X, and I'm going to treat with Y.
Yes, yeah, it's more about looking at the functional well-being of that person and their family, and how you can make that better. So then into adults, I mean, very broad spectrum of things that we can do.
Yeah, it's insane, this range you're speaking about.
I know,
like, just
I was
like the
literally...
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Literally, you guys do, I mean, everything. It's so overwhelming. I can't believe your degree is only 4 years.
And I think that's also something you don't always realize. Many OT students do not realize going in just how broad your scope of practice can be. And I think a lot of people end up changing. They'll come in saying they did it because they love kids, mm-hmm. and they'll end up in something totally different because they realize, oh my word, there's so much more I can do.
Yeah.
So like with the work related stuff, there's an entire field for vocational rehabilitation. So someone who's, for example, had a stroke and now they've got to go back to work. What do we do? Can they go back to work?
Yeah.
How can we help them go back to work? What adaptations can we make to their workplace environments? So we learn a lot about the Labor Relations Act and Employment Equity Act and how you can advocate for people with disabilities in the workplace. We've got a few OTs that consult on road accident fund cases. So working in the medical legal field, assessing, you know, the functional fallout and what that's going to mean for that person long term. Even with helping someone, say, for example, you've got a teenager with a disability who's looking to go to university, how can they transition to university? What reasonable accommodations would need to be put
like
in place?
Looking back on my life, why have I not seen an occupational therapist, you know?
Yeah, I felt like I needed like five. Yeah.
But that's actually really insane. And as you said, it is in a massive broad scope, but I love how it's so patient integrated. But I think that also makes it, your theory must be so difficult, because I can imagine to have all of this knowledge that you have to now sift through and apply just to an individual can be quite overwhelming. So, geez, props to you guys, eh?
Yeah.
We just have, like, flow diagrams. They're like, they have this? Okay, treat with that.
Give that OT a bell.
Yeah. So all students and professionals working in the healthcare system remember certain points and patients for whatever reason. And sometimes it's just the sheer absurdity of the case that you're dealing with, or it's that rewarding feeling of witnessing a patient's return to health. And sometimes it's even just something profound that a patient shares with you. Would you mind sharing such an encounter with us?
So there's one story that comes to mind like immediately when you say that, which was a patient that I saw during my ComServe. And I got the referral on my desk for a 67-year-old female who is now a baloney amputation. Well, she's had a baloney amputation. She's got diabetes and she's blind.
Oh, wow.
And my brain, immediately when I see this referral, I'm like, oh,
what am I going to do?
So hard.
When you start.
Yeah, and you guys will see once you get to the hospital, but once you get to internship ComServe, when you're really seeing patients like that, the diabetic foot patients who've had amputations, they're often these gorgors who have no motivation.
Yeah.
They just want you to leave them alone. And here comes this perky little OC like, hello, gorgors, we're going to get out of bed.
Like, no.
No, not having it. Like, it's really difficult to motivate them. And now I'm thinking she's blind on top of it. Like, oh, I'm going to have such uphill with this.
Yeah.
And I get to the room and she's up. She's sitting over the edge of the bed and she's looking for something in her bedside table. There's knitting on the bedside table.
Oh, my word.
And immediately I was like, oh, this is not going to be what I thought it was going to be. And she's probably one of the most incredible patients I've seen in terms of what occupation can do to motivate someone and to get them back on their feet. And she had gone blind when she was about 17, 18.
Oh, my word.
Gradually degenerative retinopathy, and she was a bowler, so you know lawn bowls, blind bowls, and she bowled for South Africa. And the whole reason shame she'd had the amputation was just because she couldn't do her own foot inspections, and she cut her toenail, and then been a little bit of a cut, and you know with diabetes, and also going to the clinic, she'd mentioned that they'd check her sugar every week or whenever she went, and she could never see what her sugar was. So she didn't actually realize she was diabetic. And then...
Wow, talk about a lack of communication.
Yeah, so poor their system error. But and then not being able to see her foot, didn't realize that she had an infection, and then having the baloney amputation.
Okay.
But she was so motivated. The physio and I got her up into a walking frame within, like, 2-3 days, she was up on the walking frame. She actually also had a guide dog, very, very cute, and she was super motivated to get home to her guide dog. And we did bowling in the physio department. And she was so motivated, so they flipped the walker around, and the physio stood with her, and I set the bowling pins up on the far side, and she did everything off hearing. So
sure.
She could tell me, I'd say to her, okay, it's here. She'd go down, she'd bowl, and she could tell me before I said anything, she'd say, oh, was that about a meter right? Or was that about there? Oh, I hit over 3 pins of 10 or whatever. Dead accurate every time. If she could have seen my face, my jaw was sitting down here. But she did so well through the rehab
What
process.
An amazing story. And I think it's literally for moments like that. That's like, you're like, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Makes it that much sweeter, I suppose.
Yeah, she made my job easy because she had
all the motivation.
Such good motivation.
You didn't have to bring it for her.
Yeah.
Awesome. That is so cool.
Yeah.
Lawn bowls is really fun, though.
Yeah, it's fun. Especially if there's a gin and tonic involved. And then we're having a good time.
Did you ever play at the club there close to Kalitia, actually? Just, it's across the Melchizedek.
I know where it is, but we never actually...
Pretoria.
It's only Olympus that does that.
Since leaving Varsity, I've done it a lot more.
It is such good fun, honestly. No better way to spend our afternoon.
I feel like I'm really, really missing out, guys. I need to go play some lawn bowl.
You get dressed up, you get a beer. Yeah.
We're all white, and then...
There we go. Good to go. Make a celebration out of it.
Some good memories for coming back here. Anyway. So, much has been said about the relationship between doctors and the different allied healthcare professionals. It's often a contentious topic. Most doctors see themselves at the top of the hierarchy or top of the professional hierarchy and tend to look down on the other professions, unfortunately. Mm. Have you ever felt as if a doctor has treated you condescendingly or treated you without the necessary level of respect throughout your studies or your working life so far?
So this is an interesting one from, I've never, in a on a professional level, I've never actually felt that a doctor has not respected me. Mm. Sometimes communication can be really difficult, and like your opinion might not be as considered in some decisions. But on a, when I first went to varsity and actually starting off in res, I can remember a very distinct experience of one of the med students, and again this goes back to perception, asking me if I did OT because I couldn't get into medicine. Was I not smart enough to get into medicine?
If only they knew how difficult it is to get into OT.
Yeah, like it just, and you know, there's so many emotions that go through it there. Like actually it was my choice. It's
not everyone actually wants to be a doctor, just by the way.
Yeah. So I think that perception sometimes can, like, we've got almost got a perception from before about where doctors, as a layperson, you have a perception about where doctors fit in the hierarchy. Mm. And that can get carried through.
Yeah.
If you don't see the value of the other team members and you're not taught the value of how everything works together. So, and I find some doctors are incredible and will integrate it really well and they can see that bigger picture, and some people get stuck on my little bubble.
Yeah.
This is what I'm doing, and not worrying about, you know, the step further than that.
Which is so unfortunate for the patient at the end of the day, because they lose out on that integration, which is exactly what they need, because it's supposed to be an integrated healthcare approach for them to get the best results.
Yeah.
So that is quite unfortunate. And, you know, the reason we ask the question is because I've seen it amongst our peers and I've seen it amongst our doctors. And I've also seen how horribly doctors treat students. And it's just like there is this hierarchy, I don't know, arrogance that we really need to start chatting about and we really need to start breaking down. Because, I mean, the emotional abuse that I've suffered under horrible doctors as a student is ridiculous. And to have, like, you know, I understand the job comes with a lot of pressure, but there's no need to ever be rude or mean to anybody.
It's or to make someone feel small.
No.
When they're there performing an important role, and especially as a student, you don't have a choice about being there. You're there to learn.
And I'm paying a lot of money.
Yeah.
Like, really.
And being there to learn means you don't know everything yet.
You're not going to be useless, and that's fine.
Yeah. You're there to ask questions. You're there to get experience.
Observe and learn.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a whole other can of worms that we need to work through.
Well, yeah, as a med student, when you're trying to, like, decipher, when you have a case to do and you're trying to decipher it, you often, like, end up going through the patient's file. And then whatever, first of all, you're trying to figure out what's going on. Secondly, you're trying to read all this different handwriting.
Oh, the handwriting, that's another thing. We should send all the flippin' doctors to OTs to get their handwriting checked, because really.
Doctors need handwriting.
My word.
Sometimes I think they write poorly so that no one can read what they've written. Exactly. If they're unsure of what they're doing, then they write it badly. Someone else
scribble.
Can guess what
that's should
be done.
I think that's an
R. No.
Anyway, and then thirdly, you just sometimes see, like, a refer to OT or refer to physio, right?
Yeah.
And there seems to be a disconnect between this, just like, here the doctor writing his notes and just refer to OT. And you spoke about that now and said, like, some doctors are better at integrating and some are not so good and some have their bubble. But how do you think OTs can be better integrated into the recovery journey of the patient? What can a doctor do?
So I think it's really about getting to know your patients and actually asking them what's meaningful to them.
Mm.
Like, okay, cool, you've had a stroke. But do I know anything about your life outside of this hospital?
Yeah.
Have I asked you what you do for a living? How many people you support at home? What kind of house do you live in? Like, are you living in the middle of Alex and, you know, you don't have access to certain basic services? Like, what is your life going to look like after this? What are you going back to? And I think very quickly then, if you've had that conversation and you're looking at a patient who can't walk, and now they tell you that they walk like a good 30 kilometers a day because that's, they've got to walk to and from wherever, you're going to go, ooh, flip.
Yeah.
we need someone else to help you. I can't do this. We need that extra. Yeah. So I think the biggest thing is having that time to just have that conversation with the patient about, you know, what's meaningful, what's important to them.
And I wish that was more like hopped on in med school, because obviously when we take our histories, they're like always important, take a social history. But when you're presenting, the doctor's like, skip over that. And I've found
social
that
history's not important.
I've found that so yeah. many times, but you really need that to place your patient in context. And yes. I remember once I had one patient, and it was honestly like, he had squamous cell carcinoma, and it was really just, it had gone really bad, and he was a really old man. And I didn't understand how it had got to that point. Yeah. And I actually had to turn around to the doctor and say, can we get a social worker in here, please? Because this is, like, there's some form of abuse happening,
that it got,
you know,
to that,
that is at this point.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes, I understand there's so much on our plates as doctors. I really get that. But you need to, if you want to get a good result, you need to have that holistic view of your patient yeah. and be able to place them.
And I think that's where, you know, medicine's curative, and that orientation to more of a prevention and promotion approach to mm-hmm. healthcare is really important. And that's where, like, I'm speaking about a lady with diabetic foot who's having an amputation. If you'd known more about that lady's social circumstances when she got diabetes, and you're looking and saying, okay, this person doesn't have anything to motivate them. This girl's sitting at home. She doesn't do anything. Like, of mm-hmm. course things are going to get worse from there. She's not active. She has nothing to motivate her.
Yeah.
So I think often that's also, OT gets called in as a curative thing. But actually, we could do a lot on a prevention and promotion
yeah.
level.
Yeah.
If you even think substance abuse, and then I didn't even touch on the psychiatric field earlier, but if you think with substance abuse, and especially like when I did my ComServe, the area nearby, massive issues with substance abuse, and from like lighties from 12 years old and stuff who are getting hooked on drugs, and because they have nothing else to do.
Yeah.
They have no meaningful occupations. So what are you going to do when you're bored? That's
exactly
that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that cycle perpetuates itself. So I think even considering it from a prevention and promotion yeah. perspective, and understanding your patient from the moment you see them, where they come from, and like you put it beautifully, putting them in context, then you're going to be able to make the next step is going to be obvious to you, because you're
yeah.
going to go, oh,
okay.
So the problem is, that's why I'm seeing this health condition, actually,
yeah.
because there's all of this going on at home.
100%.
Yeah.
So, speaking just now about an occupational therapist, what do you think are essential qualities an occupational therapist should have?
So, I definitely think you have to be patient.
That's just about
a feeling.
Yeah.
You definitely, patience is key. And generally, OTs end up being these very bubbly, sort of positive people, but I don't actually even think that's... You do have to be positive, but I think the more important thing is to be interested in people.
Mm.
And to really not just want to make things better for people, but to want to know about people's lives and the way
yeah.
they do things. And to be... You need to be someone who's open-minded to the fact that there are very different ways of doing things.
Yeah.
And to respect that. If you can do that, if you've got those two, that patience, the open-mindedness and the respect, you'd go a long way. And definitely also creativity. I think you've got to be, not necessarily creativity in the sense of like being good at art or something like that, but to think laterally, to think differently about problems. I think that's also really, really important.
To come to certain solutions. Like you said, there's
yeah.
a lot of ways to do these things, and creativity, obviously.
Yeah.
And also because it's such a broad field. Like, I really had no idea it was this broad. It's actually almost intimidating how it's really, there's so many things that you guys could do, and to try and, like, pull solutions together, I think sometimes can be.
Yeah. Like you said, it's not like a flow diagram of
no.
decision making. It's really patient specific.
Yeah.
And patient and family specific. And that's, yeah, you got to think sometimes.
It's strange that we aren't taught more about what OTs actually do in med school specifically, because just having this chat is very empowering in the sense of us.
And informative. I mean, it's something that I think will always stick with me. And
that's
every patient
we need.
In every patient I see now, I'm going to be like, okay, is there room for an occupational therapist here? Because I actually know what an occupational therapist does.
Yeah, and I think they've tried it at, I know I've seen it a little bit at WITS now, and I think they, just after I'd left Tux, they'd started trying to do those integrated lectures where you're supposed to get from an OT. But that's exactly the thing. No one goes.
No one listens because it doesn't come.
Yeah, we're like, okay, we don't have to study this for the block, whatever.
I think that's a shortfall in the whole health sciences, to be honest, of we're so focused. It's generally the kind of person who's an overachiever. And we're very focused on doing our best marks-wise. As soon as there's marks involved, then the anxiety goes, and it's just about the mark.
Game over.
I think that was, again, something in fourth year, that when we did a lot, our whole fourth year is pretty much practical, I had to let that go to focus on the person in front of you.
Yeah.
It's not actually just a mark. You're getting the opportunity to touch someone's life.
Yeah.
You're going to go out, and that's going to be your job, is to go into people's lives and make changes. And that's much bigger than just the mark that you're getting.
And I think that's something that we generally tend to get very sucked in and forget as medical students. And I find a lot of the time, like, I want to sit and I want to do this piece of work really, really well, but time doesn't afford for it.
Yes.
Mm. And I have to cram it if I want to get the marks. And that is like that whole structure.
Well, that surface view of it instead of understanding it, yeah.
Yeah, and that is such a problem in itself. And that's why when I actually get the time to sit and actually like really, because it's such interesting stuff. We do the most interesting work. I mean, it's phenomenal. And then when you can take that and you can put it into practice, it's such a rewarding feeling. But when everything is like rushed, it's just, you know, it's too intense.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, where we fall short. I think, you know, I still hope that we'll be prepared. I mean, we'll see one day when we are there in the field, if we are. I have a sense that we will be, but it does take away that passion for what you're doing.
Yeah, and it definitely, to see the long game and to keep that in mind can be, I agree with you that time-wise, it's not always accounted for. And it's that meaningful application needs to come from a higher level of saying, giving you time to meaningfully apply it. And even just applying it to yourself, like you said, it's super interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's about, like, you. It's about being human. So it's relevant. And if you have the time to engage with it,
do it.
Yeah.
All right. So that brings us to the end of our chat today. And I just want to say thank you so much for coming in. I love these types of episodes. I feel like after every discussion we have, I always learn something new, and I really hope our guests and our listeners have taken from this, and especially our soon-to-be doctors. I really hope that you can sit and think, is this patient, is there a place for occupational therapist in this patient's life? And I'm pretty sure most of the time there will be.
It's
probably going to be yes, if you were listening closely today. So yes, thank you so much, Bronwyn, for coming all the way. We really, really appreciate it. I must say, you and Ryan are phenomenal in the your thought processes and what you guys have come up with. You guys are really something to be reckoned with in the healthcare field. So really wish you the best. And to our listeners, let us know what you think. We really hope you appreciate this series. It's definitely something I think we all need. And just give us some feedback on Instagram, Facebook, whatever. Drop us a DM. Tell us what you think. And thank you so much for listening.
This is MedTalk signing off.
Bye.